This is the Baltimore Sports Free For All.
The end of summer always brings about interesting things in the professional wrestling world, and things have happened this past week that just make you wonder, blurs the line of fiction and reality, and you're wondering to yourself how exactly they executed that at the end of the SummerSlam main event, which a lot of people would think was kind of weak sauce at the moment, but then when you realize the fallout that happened from it and how people just could not tell if Brock Lesnar actually did bust open Randy Orton with a legit elbow to the head, it just makes you wonder about that. And then a couple of days later on the post-game show, of all things, a post-game show on the network itself, you have one Mike the Miz Mizanin delivering a scathing promo to one Daniel Bryan on the show, and people were wondering if that was legit or was it fiction, everything like that. Maybe the answer to both those questions could be a little bit of lines in between, and you're just wondering, is this a new direction now for the World Wrestling Entertainment? Because you just wonder, what exactly is real and what exactly is fiction? They're taking advantage of some of the dirt sheets that are online now, and the people that want to get like these rumors started that there's like some type of friction going on in the back locker room, and I think WWE is capitalizing that and trying to blur the lines of fact or fiction. What are your thoughts, Josh?
Well, it's sort of been the trend in the pro wrestling world this year where they are blurring the lines between fiction and reality. I'll give you a prime example. Broken Matt Hardy of Impact Wrestling. I mean, that guy is actually living his gimmick 24/7 now, where he's saying he's a deity that was born on 777 AD, July to 77 AD. And he's been carrying it with quite some steam and quite some viral power, and it's actually taken his career to new heights. Or even Cody Rhodes, who has been shooting quite a bit against WWE and has been debuting with Evolve Wrestling and soon to be affiliated with Ring of Honor. But once you get past all that and you go into WWE territory and you go from the Brock Lesnar beatdown that was handed to Randy Orton, which sort of looked equivalent to what Nate Diaz suffered at the UFC pay-per-view not too recently against Conor McGregor. And then you go to Talking Smack on the following Tuesday with The Miz just delivering the promo of his career, the promo of his life, basically. You know, it's getting to a point now where you look at it as a casual fan and say, this is some damn entertaining stuff right here. I'm actually quite impressed.
That's some wild, crazy stuff. And you hear about that in the past. To give an example of what people were thinking with Brock Lesnar legitimately beating up Randy Orton in the ring, because, yeah, wrestling is scripted, but they don't really take the punches or the elbows to the face so often. But an example of somebody actually getting violent in the ring many years ago was Antonio Inoki, the founder of New Japan Pro Wrestling, going up against the Great Antonio. The Great Antonio refused to sell any of his moves. You know, Antonio Inoki was hitting him with moves, and the Great Antonio was just sitting there like, yeah, ha, I'm not taking your moves, everything like that. So you know what Antonio Inoki did? Legit beat the crap out of him. Legit, like, hammering, fisting on him and everything like that. And he said, yeah, does it hurt now? Does it hurt now? And he just kept beating the crap out of him. The ref had to restrain him. And it was kind of a notable incident and something that you look back on, you kind of laugh at. But at the time, you're thinking to yourself, wow, here's a guy who is actually getting violent in the ring and something that's been happening. A guy like the Antonio Inoki, who is a legend in the pro wrestling business, him can actually lose his cool or try to, you know, show off in the ring, and that's exactly what was happening back then. A lot of people thought Brock Lesnar was doing the same thing, especially they were saying maybe he had some type of heat against Orton because of that one promo he did back at Battleground with a no enhancement needed comment that he made fresh off of his drug suspension in UFC. And then after that happened, you hear about these reports from Pro Wrestling Insider that Chris Jericho got into an altercation with Brock Lesnar backstage where they were calling each other the P word. There were maybe some kisses exchanged. I was hearing about this.
Oh, kiss me or fight me.
Yeah, and then they kind of get into it, and they have to be restrained by everybody, including Triple H and Vince McMahon. And then you hear Vince McMahon finally say, it's a work. It's a work. What is wrong with you? But to anybody that's listening to this podcast, don't know what the difference between a work and a shoot. A work is when you hear something like an injury or something like that, but it's actually part of the storyline, so it's not really real. But if it's a shoot, then it is real.
So it's like, I'll give you folks a visual example here. It's like if I came up and made a smacking noise next to Ray's microphone and he said, Josh, you hit me. That would be a work. If I actually came up and smacked you in the face, that'd be a shoot. Because who wants to take a smack in the face?
Well, that's exactly what I said. That's what I was referring to with the example of the Gray Antonio and Antonio Inoki. You don't have to give a second example. But I guess people understand now the difference between a work and a shoot. And that was something that was blurring the lines between fantasy and reality. And it paid off in dividends because it's been trending on Facebook. It's been trending on Twitter. Yes, every time I look up on my social media accounts know that I have an interest in professional wrestling and different interests that I take. So they try to, cater the trends towards my likings, but then you're just seeing it as global trends of The Miz. I'm like, The Miz is trending. Wow, holy crap. He actually made his career relevant again. Brock Lesnar trending. Of course, Brock Lesnar, whenever he does anything, always trends on Facebook and social media, but just everything that's been happening, it seems to have paid off for the WWE in big, big piles because they're now being talked about in mainstream outlets and mainstream media. Even casual wrestling fans or casual fans in general that aren't even wrestling fans are talking about this.
So as we review the NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2 and SummerSlam 2016 and the post-Raw, post-SmackDowns from SummerSlam, we're not going to go by match basis, but let's start with some of the key components that have happened from this past weekend and the past couple days. Let's start off with NXT first. Okay, Bobby Roode making his NXT pay-per-view debut against Andrade Almas. I got to say, Ray, when it comes to entrances and music and talent, I feel like sometimes the greatest wrestlers have the best entrance music. I have to say, Bobby Roode's may be at the top of my list right now.
Well, considering that was also something that was trending, prior to that pay-per-view, was the Glorious Bombs by Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano.
Also former Ring of Honor products. Well, Tommaso Ciampa is.
Yes, and they were both playing his music, and they just nod in approval at him, and just they do their thing, and they just made a compilation of it going on, so people were already had that stuck in their head, and then the entire crowd in Brooklyn was singing to his entrance music as he was coming out to his glorious music, and he ended up picking up the victory, so that was something that he would have to do because he was white hot in that crowd, and he continues is 39 years old. Bobby Roode is, and yet he can still cater to everybody. And I think this is the biggest that his career has ever jettisoned.
Imagine how great that will be if he is at WrestleMania with 80,000 people singing that song.
Imagine how great it would be if Shinsuke Nakamura comes out to a whole orchestra coming out with his entrance music. Of course, you had Lee England Jr. with his entrance at NXT Brooklyn. I got to admit, I was looking at that at first, and I was like, who is this guy? But then my girlfriend was actually marking out at it because she knew who he was, and she was going all kinds of crazy, and then he plays Nakamura's entrance theme, and people were going nuts about that. They're singing along to his entrance theme. His entrance theme doesn't even have lyrics, Josh.
Yeah.
And so they're singing along to that even after the entrance is over. I thought to me, his entrance, just the way it was built up, just the way his mannerisms were, and getting Lee England Jr. to actually play the his entrance music and everything else that was going on, what was at stake and on the line, and the atmosphere, even the announcer was jacked up after that because he just had like a higher inflection in his voice and everything that he was talking about when he was doing his introductions. And then with, I thought that was the greatest entrance I've ever seen.
All right, now moving on to SummerSlam 2016. Again, not reviewing every match, but reviewing the key parts. Let's start with the SummerSlam pay-per-view. What did you like the most? What did you like the least? And what made you say, so-so?
Well, what I liked the most was the in-ring work. Everybody, I think, delivered on all calibers. I mean,
was your best match?
Even the six women tag match was pretty good. The best match itself was John Cena, AJ Styles.
Yep.
I'd say the tie between that and Charlotte and Sasha Banks, just because that match was also high flying and things were just, that match was violent for a women's match. Very, very violent. There were a few botches there here and there, but then again, it was pretty much, the tail of the tape. Those two matches, I think, were the best in-ring work I've seen at that pay-per-view. And, that was something to behold because AJ Styles goes over clean on Cena. Cena like hangs up his bracelet. Is he calling it quits or is he just taking some time off and everything that's happened?
AJ Styles wearing that as a headband on SmackDown later on too.
Yeah, and then Charlotte winning over Sasha, I guess you could say clean, even though she was selling a back injury that was actually a legit back injury as we found out, and she's out for some extended period of time. Now what I liked the least about SummerSlam, I'm going to have to say it, Josh, the crowd.
Yeah.
I thought the crowd sucked.
Yeah. Did it have more to do with the enthusiasm of the crowd, or was it more to do with, say, the Universal title showing?
It was just the snarkiness of the crowd in general. I mean, they were like, here are these people putting on a good show for you, and you've got to, I think any crowd that busts out a CM Punk chant is weak.
Of course.
Nowadays.
Because that was so 2014, late 2014.
Yeah, so 3 years ago, and yeah, late 2014. Okay, 2 years ago. But yeah. That was so, get over yourselves and everything that's been happening. I mean, this is New York, and every time I hear like a CM Punk chant, I have to think to myself, okay, this crowd sucks. And then everything else that's going on with the We Want Slater chants when Roman Reigns is being absolutely violent the way you want him to be. You know, you boo the guy, and you don't want to, like, have them be in the main title picture, so he's taking a step back and being in the U.S. title picture, and is actually doing what made him popular at TLC. He's being violent. He's beating the crap out of people with a steel chair, and that's what people liked about him, and yet we're still hearing CM Punk and We Want Slater chants. And then moving on to the Universal Title Championship match, which, yes, I hated the belt design, too. I hate the actual, you know, name of the belt itself, but you don't take that on the in-ring competitors that are actually going at the belt, because those two went hard during that match, and it was something to behold. Fantasy booking. You don't know when you're ever going to see a Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor again. And then you find out later on that Balor was legit injured in that match because he took a powerbomb to the barricade, popped his shoulder out, popped it back in, but tore his labrum, and he continued the match and still went, you know, hardcore Finn Balor-like against Seth Rollins. And people are booing that because they're booing the title, and they're not paying attention to the in-ring product that's happening right now. And Seth Rollins rightfully called them out after the show.
I will say, so-so moment, I'm sure you will agree, the Dean Ambrose-Dolph Ziggler match, for a match that had such great build going into it, I do think these guys need to work on their chemistry a little bit more.
Well, there's that, and there's something else I could say I dislike about the card. Just the card in general was just very confusing how they stacked it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Universal title, there was like two more matches afterwards.
Universal title was the match before Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton. But
officially,
yeah.
The match afterwards, because there was supposed to be another match after that for the U.S. title, and it didn't happen. So that ended in a no contest. The actual WWE championship itself, which I could say is the real title, because Raw just happened to make up its own title because they didn't have one. They were salty.
Yeah.
So, the real title, which Dean Ambrose is currently holding now for SmackDown, that is the actual real title, and there were four matches after that. It just kind of like took the wind out of the sails. I'm like, okay, so Dolph Ziggler is probably not going to win this match. He's going to come up short yet again, and then things happen the way it goes. I'm kind of over Dean Ambrose, to tell you the truth.
Do you think he needs a heel turn?
I just think he needs to be more, as Stone Cold said on his podcast, he needs to, you know, push the envelope, be more edgier, be more tough, and everything that's been happening, because it just seems like his gimmick is, well, if I could quote Daniel Bryan, is can kind of soft.
Best moment for me, of course, was John Cena, AJ Styles. I thought it was a great match. I don't think it'll be their last match. I think we'll have another match at WrestleMania. Worst moment, of course, was Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson beating the New Day by DQ, when I thought that should have been the pay-per-view they won the titles. It's been a year the New Day held the titles.
Well, it wasn't a year that night.
That night,
but it was 364.
Of course, 364.
So you're wondering to yourself, man, they're going to let this carry on at least one more night, right? But then they have it to where Anderson and Gallows win, but there's shenanigans involved and everything else that's been happening.
And Jon Stewart again.
This time he did not take a bump or did not swing a steel chair at anybody. He was just like, hey, I'm going to be here. He's going to get ring postitis and everything that's been happening. I thought the masonry jar was kind of funny and everything that was happening. And you just saw
Doc Gallows, wink, wink.
And then you see Big E drink formaldehyde and everything that was... it was definitely a weird thing. But then the next night on Raw, you have your fallout. Finn Balor actually did, as I said, got hurt in that match and is out for 6 months. That really, really bums me out. He wins the title and then has to give it back up. And that was a shame. They tried to bring up the mood a little bit, though, by debuting Bayley, because she lost at NXT Brooklyn against Asuka.
Great match.
And a really good match. And so she came back and has to go against the world's biggest jobber in Dana Brooke. And so now...
the Enforcer, Dana Brooke?
Yeah, so now Bayley is on the main roster and is making a run at the title in Sasha Banks' absence, which will not be very long, as we found out. She's only out for like maybe a month or two. So do you put the belt on Bayley or do you keep it on Charlotte? I don't know if you actually put the belt on Bayley this quick, because you're already doing it with Balor. You were trying to do it with Balor.
Here's what I would do. I would do... Bayley win over Charlotte at the next pay-per-view by DQ. Charlotte beating Bayley at the next one after that. And then at Survivor Series, Sasha Banks returns. You have a three-way match between Charlotte, Sasha Banks, and Bayley. And I would have Bayley end up winning the title at Survivor Series. I think that'd be the good booking right there.
Okay, yeah, because she's not winning it just almost instantaneously like Balor did. As they said about Balor, it's like, oh, this is the first man to make his pay-per-view debut and win a title, the world title.
All right, and on SmackDown, you had the debut of the new tag titles, which I have to say at least aren't bronze. And then you had
silver.
They're silver, which isn't bad. Silver's above bronze. Ask your fellow Olympians. And of course, the debut of the women's title. I mean, hey, what were you going to do, right? I mean, it was.
Well, you could have them like the women's champion be on both shows. I'm not opposed to that.
But the highlight, of course, was talking smack with Daniel Bryan calling The Miz a cowardly wrestler, which of course The Miz took to heart and lashed out against Daniel Bryan, saying he's the coward because he won't ever step in a WWE ring again. What were your thoughts on that promo?
Like I said, thought it was, I couldn't tell if it was real or if it was not so real. And it definitely hit home because The Miz is right, I want to say.
Yeah.
Because.
Don't you hate when a heel's right?
Yeah, that's what they're supposed to be.